Yinzers, welcome to episode 74 of Yinz Are Good, the podcast that shares and celebrates all of the good stuff going on out there and all of those good people who are making that good stuff happen. I am your host, Tressa Glover. I hope you're well. Boy, we've got a special episode here for you today in honor of Veterans Day. I wanted to feature local veterans, hear their stories, hear about their journeys, and find out how they're doing, how they're helping their fellow veterans to share their stories, to heal, to reconnect once they come back home. And thanks to our friends at the Veterans Breakfast Club, Sean Hall in particular, I connected with Don Nemchik, a Navy Vietnam veteran, and Adam Zafuto, who is an Army veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan. What an honor to talk with each of them, and not just with the two of them, but also with Alexandra Zafuto, Adam's wife, who joined our conversation to share her journey along the way. And, you know, their journey together. So two powerful conversations about healing and helping and sharing that I think we all could benefit from. I do want to let you know that in our conversations, we do cover the topic of PTSD. So please do take care when listening. And I also have a story to share with you about my grandfather, Thomas Glover, who served in the Navy in the South Pacific in World War II. So that's coming up. And Don is back for another Name That Neighborhood segment. It awaits us all. And so this is a jam-packed episode, so we're going to get to it. But a quick reminder that I do want to hear from you. We all do want to hear from you. So if you have a story, a good news story, good things that are going on, someone who you're grateful for, an act of kindness that changed your life, all of these things and others that I have not mentioned, just email us here at yinzaregood@gmail.com. And now let's get to that good stuff. So my grandfather, Thomas Glover, was in the Navy, World War II, in the South Pacific, as I mentioned, and or PEPAP, as we grandkids and great-grandkids refer to him. But just a wonderful man. And we were very lucky because he did share a lot of his stories. He had a photo album full of pictures during that time. And he and my grandmother, they actually kept all of their letters that they wrote back and forth during that time. They got married in Florida, where when he was doing his basic training, etc. there, they got married. And before he left to go fight, she was pregnant with my Uncle Tommy. And so they wrote letters back and forth. They kept them all in a big shoebox. And, you know, you could look at them and you see what's redacted, of course, during that time. But how lucky we all were to not just have the two of them in our lives, but that part of their history, that part of our family's history, our country's and the world's history. So he served, but also his two brothers also served in World War II. They all were fighting at the same time. So, and how grateful am I to say they all came back home. So my grandfather was the oldest, and then there was Billy, and then there was Earl. And this article appeared in the Pittsburgh Press. So those of you who remember that newspaper from back in the day, this appeared in the Pittsburgh Press on July 18th, 1945. It reads, "Typhoon in Pacific blows three brothers together. Have first meeting since early in 1944. Three Pittsburgh brothers blew in on the recent typhoon near Japan and had their first reunion since early last year. As a result of the storm, which tossed about a good portion of Uncle Sam's fighting fleet, including the USS Pittsburgh, Earl, William, and Thomas Glover met at Guam. Earl, 19, a Marine private, is stationed with the 3rd Marines at Guam. His brother, Seaman William, 21, is serving aboard the Pittsburgh, and another brother, Petty Officer Thomas Lees Glover, 23, is stationed on a twin-engine patrol bomber operating off a seaplane tender in the South Pacific area. In a letter to his parents, Mr. and Mrs. W.K. Glover of 311 South Eveline Street, Earl told of the meeting, quote, "We had just finished a division parade and were sitting around shooting the breeze when someone mentioned the Pittsburgh as among several ships in the harbor. Then I discovered that it was ready to pull out. I told my commanding officer that my brother was on board and I had a chance to see him. He gave me his own Jeep to race to the dock with several of my buddies." Earl discovered that the ship was a good distance from shore and almost was ready to give up when a Navy officer, apprised of the situation, arranged to have the young Marine transferred to the boat. "Did we have a swell get-together?" Earl wrote. "Neither of us could say much for the first couple of minutes. We were just too happy." Tommy wrote that he could see Bill from his boat, but was not able to talk with him. A picture which appeared in the press last Saturday shows both boats side by side, Mrs. Glover says. Tommy, former passenger division clerk for the Pennsylvania Railroad, has been in the service for 3 years and in the South Pacific for a year. A graduate of Westinghouse High School, Homewood, he married the former Mary Jane Kernan of 630 Siegert Street. They have a son, Thomas, who will observe his first birthday July 31st. Earl, who entered the Marine Corps a year ago last April, has been overseas since September. William, who shipped out last January on the Pittsburgh, has been in the Navy since February 1943. And how special for us to have this article, and there's their three pictures, Tom, Billy, and Earl. "Ill Wind Was Good to Them" is the title of it under there. And Pap, you know, we'd heard that story and we knew that there was an article in the paper about it. And I'm so happy to have found it and to have it here to share with all of you. And I want to take this moment too to thank all of those who have served and all of the sacrifices in the many different ways that those sacrifices come, that you all have made for all of us. Yins are good. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. I hope I'm coming in loud and clear.
I hear you loud and clear. It sounds perfect.
Great.
So how have you been?
I'm grateful for the day. We got another sunshiny day here in the Pittsburgh area, and it just brightens everybody's mood.
It does, doesn't it?
Certainly.
It really does. Well, first, if I can just say I'm really thank you for your service, first of all.
It was my honor. Veterans are often thanked for their service, and I think the proper response is that it was an honor to serve our country.
Thank you. So can we start? Can you tell the audience just a little bit about you, about your background?
Certainly. My name is Don Nemchik. I grew up in the McKeesport area, about 20 miles south of Pittsburgh. And McKeesport was a blue-collar, steel-working town. The town experienced a boom of population during the industrial age, which resulted, of course, in the baby boomers of the 50s and the 60s. I was born in 1950 and graduated McKeesport High School in 1968. Upon graduation from high school, I was still unsure what I wanted to do with myself. I was not college material. And I was employed very quickly by a bank in McKeesport. And I just kind of rode out that year of 1968 until I joined the United States Navy. You have to remember, that was the peak of the Vietnam War, 67, 68. The draft was very active. We had a choice in McKeesport as young men. Either go into the mill and wait till your draft notice gets called. If you're not college material, you're probably going to get called when you're 18 and a half or 19. And or you can enlist and kind of have a little bit more control of your destiny. And that's what I chose to do. I enlisted into the Navy. I was assigned a communications school after basic training, and then I was deployed to several communication stations in Southeast Asia, later on board an attack aircraft carrier, the USS Constellation. And I finished up my service in San Diego in 1974. Returning to McKeesport, I went to work at the bank, stayed there until about 1988. I was then called upon by the U.S. Small Business Administration here in Pittsburgh to be their Veterans Business Development Officer. And what that entailed was I would work with military veterans who were interested in starting or expanding a small business. I'd identify resources for them, help them with their business plan, and do some outreach to make sure that veterans knew that they have an opportunity to do government contracting and or start their own business. Veterans were the best entrepreneurs, and here's why. Veterans are used to improvising, adapting, and overcoming challenges. Being a small business owner, that's what it's all about, challenging every day. And you can just see the environment that we're in now and recently with COVID. The challenges that small businesses had to encounter, from closing to cleaning their business every day to putting masks on, et cetera. And veterans are used to overcoming challenges, and I think they make the best entrepreneurs.
And so we talk about the time that you served, and I know we got to talk a little bit a couple of weeks ago, and you were talking about the relationships that you were able to build during that time.
That is so important to many veterans. We have a brotherhood that's very palatable. Most people who have not served may not understand that. For example, if I'm out and about, I have my Navy ball cap on, of course, and I could be at a Costco's or someplace, and here's another guy with a military hat on, and we give that head nod, kind of acknowledging each other. Then all of a sudden, we'll stop and chat 15 or 20 minutes. And oftentimes, my wife would say, "Did you know that fellow?" I said, "Never met him before." She says, "Well, heck, you talk with him for 15 or 20 minutes." I says, "It doesn't matter if we know each other. It's a brotherhood." And that's really punctuated by the fact that during the pandemic, many of us were isolated. We had to find different ways to communicate with each other. We were no longer face to face in many cases. And that brought a myriad of problems. For example, many veterans, older ones, we're not familiar with the technology, so they can reach out on a podcast or go virtual. It was very important to stay in touch with your fellow veterans. I had the blessing of having a shipmate that I had served with about 50 years ago. He lived out in Idaho, Portland, Oregon, and we stayed in touch almost every day. We would reach out to each other periodically, maybe find something funny in a book or something, or hear a song that we remembered, or identified a TV show that we thought each other would like. But it was more than that. It was just a conversation, a friendly voice from the past. We laugh about things, we cry about things. And just having that outlet was so important. And that's very common with veterans. The stories that you hear about the lifelong buddies that were serving back in the day, and all of a sudden they reunite at an airport or at a function, a reunion of their branch of service. And it's just so telling. You can see that on YouTube, or the news publicizes that a lot. And it's a tearful reunion, but it's a happy reunion because you see that guy. We always say, "Man, you're starting to look older," and you start laughing again. But you know what? You might start to look older, but back in the day, you're going right back 50 years ago and having some pretty good memories. Some of them may be harrowing. Some of them might have been that man saved your life, or vice versa. Or he was just a buddy that all of a sudden became your family member.
When you are talking about those types of connections, and for those of us who are civilians and, you know, maybe, you know, and not familiar with the time that you would have served, you know, together, what are some ways that maybe we as civilians can better understand that or better support?
I think there's several ways, but the most important one is sit down and talk to a family member or a friend, an acquaintance of some sort, about being a veteran. You know, we are coming upon Veterans Day tomorrow, November 11th, and it's important to not only remember veterans, and it's also important to acknowledge them. Many of us who served during the Vietnam era, coming home was a very, very trying experience. We left this country to serve. Some of us served multiple deployments. And in the late 60s and early 70s, the tide of the country turned. Walter Cronkite said that in 1968, America has lost this war. The student unrest on campuses as a result of the tragic situation up at Kent State, where four students were killed. Colleges were on fire. They wanted to stop the draft. Many young men did not want to go to a war that they didn't believe in. And all of a sudden, the tide turned. They blamed the warriors for the war, not the politicians. They blamed the warriors like us. So when you came home on the West Coast to an airport, mostly the airport was San Francisco or Seattle, Washington, you were told, don't wear your uniform. A cab driver will not pick you up. You also had student, you had people calling you names, mocking you. And it was a terrible experience for a lot of veterans, which put them into a shell, put them into more of a, I don't want to talk about this anymore, which is the worst thing, because what happens when you have PTSD or you have experiences like that, you have to open those doors and let it out. A lot of times, fellows don't let that out until 50 years later or longer. And it's a very debilitating function to have that on your mind, that I fought for my country, now my country doesn't want me. So it was very difficult. So to answer your question, how would someone who did not serve in that era find out about it? There are several resources. Clearly, you could go on YouTube and social different media sites. Ken Burns did a great documentary about the Vietnam War on PBS. We also have a great resource here in the Pittsburgh area and online. It's known as the Veterans Breakfast Club. And you can simply go on to veteransbreakfastclub.org and hear veteran stories. Our tagline is, every veteran has a story. We have World War II veterans still telling us their stories. For example, we have a woman who is 101 years old. She served as a code breaker in World War II. She's still vibrant. She has great stories. We acknowledged her birthday by having a little parade in front of her house, et cetera. And it's just a great, heartwarming story about how she was the graduate of Carnegie Tech University back in World War II. And they asked, she joined the Navy because the Navy was the first branch to acknowledge women as officers. So she joined
Oh,
the
I didn't know
Navy.
that.
Oh, yes. She joined the Navy in 1941. And they asked, hey, does anybody here speak German? Her project was so top secret, she couldn't even tell her father. So when she would come home on leave, they would go to dinner, and he would say, oh, this is my daughter. She's a secretary in the Navy. Well, she was a lot more than being a secretary in the Navy. So she was so proud of her service, and we still connect with her at her age of 101, and she is so cool. But again, going back to the veteransbreakfastclub.org, a website at no charge, you can go in and hear veteran stories. We have a project that we want veterans to tell us their stories so their families can have something on archive to remember them, because so many veterans, particularly World War II veterans, and many of us from Vietnam era, just kept everything inside. Later on, with the post 9/11 veterans, we Vietnam veterans had a saying. We said, we're not going to let what happened to us happen to them. That's why you've seen Vietnam veterans and their families with flags at airports, applauding young men and women when they came back from deployment. It was a different era, and the Vietnam veterans had the mantle on that to have acknowledgement that we did not have. So that said, many people who have not have a veteran in their family, or if they want to find out more, again, the veteransbreakfastclub.org, we have a podcast known as Scuttlebutt, and it tells veteran stories, and we talk about military life and jargon and different things. Also, every Monday we have what's known as a happy hour at 7 o'clock. It's a Zoom call where we have about 50 or 60 guests and attendees. Oftentimes we have an author that tells a story. Here's one of the stories that I think stands out that people of listening to your podcast, they would be interested in.
Okay.
In 1972, a GI was walking down the streets in Vietnam, wherein he found a baby suckling a dead mother. He picked that baby up and walked her to a orphanage, wherein the nuns began to take care of this infant and raise it and such. The GI came back and adopted that child, took her back to the United States to live in Wisconsin, raised her, wherein she ultimately became an officer in the United States Navy, having attended the Naval Academy.
Oh.
Kim Mitchell, Kim Mitchell, then after her service in the Navy, started a home for veterans in San Diego. And it's almost a tearjerker, but it's so uplifting. Those type of stories that we share with others gives you an idea of what the commitment of honor, duty, and commitment were of our veterans during that time frame, and also going forward. So there's just resources abundant that people can learn a little bit more about what veterans have gone through. You know, to honor them is very important, particularly around this time of year, Veterans Day. If you don't honor them, their sacrifice was for nothing. Many people sacrificed more than others, but when you raised your right hand, you literally wrote a blank check to the government to say, I would give my life for this government, for this way of life that we have in our freedom. So it's very important to remember veterans, even if you just say, thank you for your service, or we appreciate what you have done for us. It really does mean a lot. Although it sounds trivial, it isn't. It means a lot to us.
And my grandfather was in the Navy in World War II. He served in World War II in the Pacific. And I know I'm so grateful that he shared with us as he did. And he only passed away a few years ago at 96 years old.
What was his name?
His name is Tom Glover.
Well, you know, Tom Glover, in your memory, we salute you for your service, because there's a saying, if you say someone's name, they're not dead. When you quit saying, you die twice, when your heart and your brain stops working, and when then no one says your name anymore. And how I learned that growing up in this area in McKeesport, we had 23 men that were killed in Vietnam. That's a pretty high per capita. We honor them every Memorial Day and Veterans Day at a Vietnam Veterans Memorial in McKeesport at the Boys Club, where we all played ball and learned life's lessons, etc. When the Vietnam War started in 65, the first young man was killed. 66, my cousin was killed 1 week shy of his 19th birthday. Once he was returned and buried, the director of the Boys Club erected a memorial for him. Little did he know that there would be nine others following him. There was 11 members of that Boys Club. So when we meet every Veterans Day or Memorial Day, we have a chaplain who's from Nigeria. And he had told us in his culture, that's what you do. You say their name and then they're really not gone until you don't say their name anymore. So that's a very heartfelt memory to have of people, of just saying their name and remembering them. It's important, I think, on both ends.
Thank you for that. I love that. And thank you for this time today, getting to talk with you, and I really appreciate it.
I think getting the word out about veterans, this area here in Western Pennsylvania is very patriotic. We honor our veterans more than others. We have the second highest per capita of veterans in the country. I think Florida exceeds us because it's a bigger state, of course. But
Oh,
veterans here
really?
are,
I didn't
oh
know that.
yes, serve military service here is so important. Many of our fathers, our grandfathers, etc., served in World War II. They were immigrants that came to this country during the Depression, worked in steel mills. They fought in World War II and passed that patriotism on to us. It was expected of you to serve. Many people in other areas of the country fled the country and went to Canada or burned their draft cards and refused to serve. And that was their right to do that. But here in Western Pennsylvania, it was not only your right to serve, you were expected to serve. And it's an honor to have served this country.
Well, if I can say it's an honor talking to you today
Well,
again.
thank you so much. I enjoy doing these types of things. I enjoy getting the word out about our veterans. And I know the listening audience, we'll be having some questions. They're always welcome to contact me. I'll be happy to share my email if that's okay with you.
Sure, absolutely.
All right. My email is donnem1968 at AOL.com. That reads DONNEM1968 at AOL.com. I'll be happy to respond to anyone if they have some questions, if they want to know of more resources where they can learn about veterans' stories. I'll be happy to share that with them.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, Liz, it's so great to get to talk with you both. So, would you like to, do you want to start just telling us a little bit about yourselves, Adam and Alex, whatever that means to you? No, and actually, I want to say first, Adam, thank you for your service.
Well, thank you. Well, my name's Adam. It's my wonderful wife, Alexandra. Yep. Hello, we're here together.
We're talking with Tressa today about all the good stuff that's going on in the veteran space and some of the wonderful things that I've seen be very helpful in my journey home out of the military, my journey home to reconnecting and refinding myself and who it is that I want to be and where it is that I want to go with my life.
Yeah, Adam and I are both native Pittsburghers. And so we've grown up here. We've both left and come back several times. And while we met in high school, we actually started dating and got married in our late 20s, early 30s, and came back together, 10 years after we met. And we actually started our relationship right after Adam got out of the army. And so I got to witness his entire transition out. And then simultaneously, while Adam's been growing and healing and going through quite his own development journey over the last 8 years now of being out of the military, I also have been on a deep personal growth journey myself and evolving as a person, as a business owner, as a wife, and now a mom. And so we're excited to be here today to talk about, our journey and what kind of healing we found and great communities and people that have impacted us and how we've been able to in turn, impact other people. And I'm really excited for Adam to share more of his experiences specifically as a veteran.
Yeah, and I and just to that point of the journey and how, obviously you each, as we all do, we have our own individual journeys and several of them, but also the journey then that you're on together, and just exploring that idea too, how there are a few different ones at play here.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually just was reflecting this morning on how yesterday was our 8-year dating anniversary. And
Oh, congratulations.
thank you. Right around Veterans Day is when we started dating. And it's truly amazing, Tressa, how the two people sitting here talking to you today are very different people than we were 8 years ago. And our relationship is so different. I've never loved Adam more than I do right now here today. And I've never been as happy and fulfilled as I am right now. And I think the same goes for Adam from recent conversations we've had. So we'd love to talk about any and all of it. We're open books.
Oh my gosh. That's so beautiful. Before I gotta ask, so where did you go to high school?
So I went to Hampton in the North Hills, Hampton High School.
And I went to Moon.
And you went to Moon. I went to Hampton High School.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
I'm,
Small enough.
oh my gosh. That, but I will, oh, Alex, if I can ask you, if you went to Moon, do you know Paula Bobola? She taught English.
Yes, she was my 10th grade English teacher.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I love it. What are the
Wow.
chances?
Don't you love that in Pittsburgh? I feel like anytime you meet someone, there's some kind of connection. It's just such a small town.
Yes. Oh, I love it. Where would you like to start as far as with, with your story that you're sharing today, as far as your journey?
I think we should start with right now. Let's start with where I'm at. And I think we're having a different experience here in how we're experiencing the world and the happiness that we're seeing, not only in the fulfillment and what we're doing and where we're headed, but also in just our everyday life. And I think that that has been deeply impacted by being intentional about where we wanted to be and where we wanted to go with our lives. And I think some of the therapy that I've done over the course of my journey home, but also especially the therapy I've done in the last year, has been tremendously impactful in changing that experience much for the better. Yeah, I think that that journey really of healing started when I got out of the military in 2014. In November of 2014, I kind of was done and finished and heading home from Fort Bliss. And yeah, that's kind of where the healing journey started. And I think even on healing journeys where you find yourself very healed and very happy, things can happen that pull you back into the depths of some of that pain that you had experienced. And for me, that was the fall of Afghanistan when we were watching this this nation and this society and this idea of freedom for Afghan women and for democracy and for the ideas of the independent Afghan woman who has the agency to make her own decisions and choose how it is that she chooses to guide and direct her life being washed away in the span of a couple months hit, I think, a lot of Afghanistan veterans, myself in particular, very deeply. And it hit us in a spot that we had put trust in that we wouldn't have those Saigon moments of helicopters being lifted off of the roof of embassies and of thousands of refugees trying to escape, you know, the enemy that had just marched through all of the gates. And so for me, that event, watching it all happen, was for me very, opened up a lot of wounds that I had thought were healed. And I think Alex can speak to that as well.
Yeah, you know, it was an especially difficult time for us, Tressa, because I actually had just given birth to our daughter, which was a beautiful experience. And as I'm sure many new parents can understand, you're also in the heights of sleep deprivation. You know, you're exhausted. You're taking care of this beautiful newborn baby. And so she was born July 30th, and Afghanistan fell, I mean, less than
August
a month later.
Yeah, 30th, okay. 31st was the eventual date of like all American troops being off of the ground. So it was like a month.
Yeah, into our daughter's birth. And so Adam, you know, at the hospital was getting messages from his former interpreters asking if he could help them get their families out, that Afghanistan was becoming not safe anymore. And then once it officially fell, I mean, Adam started getting pulled into trying to get people out. He was going down into the depths of anxiety and feeling so helpless and frustrated. And, you know, we'd been together, I mean, 7 years at this point. We had already gone through a lot of healing together. You know, Adam mentioned he did talk therapy. I also participated for 2 years in talk therapy with him, so I could really understand what he was experiencing with moral injury, or as many people call it, post-traumatic stress disorder. And so we really learned how to tackle a lot of that together, and we grew so much closer. And we were in this amazing spot in our relationship when our daughter was born. And then between me going through a little bit of postpartum anxiety and depression myself, and then Adam experiencing the fall of Afghanistan, we were just suddenly back in this dark place. I didn't fully know the extent of what was going on with him. I just knew he was distant. He was angry. He was sad. He was spending hours in our basement trying to figure out how to get people out of Afghanistan and to evacuate them. And then I'm also feeling more alone as I'm in the beginning of, you know, motherhood. And as your mom knows, just there's so much right happening at that time. And we weren't really seeing each other. And so that went on for months. I mean, and then I think we finally reached this point at the beginning of 2020 where we knew, or 2022, we knew something had to change. And we both were really seeking, you know, I wanted to heal from my postpartum anxiety and depression. Adam wanted to heal from what he was experiencing. And so we both sort of made these independent decisions, but at the same time, to go deeper into healing and personal growth. And, you know, I'm a business and success coach. I've been studying personal growth and elevating consciousness for many years, but I decided to take a much deeper dive into it. And that's when Adam also started, you know, receiving more mentorship and therapy and started engaging in psychedelic healing, which he can talk more about.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it was this pivotal point for us because we just didn't know, I didn't know the extent of what he was dealing with. Mm-hmm. And now I've come to really see, I mean, he was just in the depths of struggling with feeling like a failure because of what happened in Afghanistan and feeling so helpless and like he couldn't help these people that he had vowed to help. And that was just crushing for him. Mm-hmm. And it made him just sort of self-isolate in his pain. And it still breaks my heart to this day to realize now the depths of sadness and pain he was going through last fall. And at the same time, he's also had so much transformation since then. So it's also encouraging to see how much growth can occur in a short time.
Yeah. And so that's what kind of this year has looked like, this massive immersion into how can we heal and what are the other ways of healing that are available to us? For me, I had had the experience with really intentional, really incredible counselors at the Duquesne Military Psychology Clinic and saw great results with that. But I kind of knew like, hey, I needed to be the best father possible for my daughter now. I don't have another couple of years to really get all of these emotions and these feelings out. And I had started to hear about a lot of the benefits available inside of the treatment space for post-traumatic stress and using psychedelics. And there's been kind of this resurgence of them being used in their proper ceremonial and healing contexts in the last, you know, 5 or 10 years, especially in the last couple of years. There's been enough scientific study and enough data collected on using these treatments that kind of the evidence is there. These things work if you're willing to open yourself up and you're using to work, you kind of utilize them in the proper context. My experience here has been radically changed. My perspective on the challenges that I'm encountering, the things in my life that may once have kind of brought me down or took me into a low place, now I can look at them through a different lens. And a lot of that is learning and seeing things through the perspective shift that psychedelics help you gain when they're used properly.
So how does that work, if I may just ask it that way?
So all of the real heavy scientifically studied stuff has gone under a couple phases. Phase 1, 2, and 3 of Dr. Rick Doblin did these studies using treatment resistant PTSD diagnosis cases in veterans. And phase 1, phase 2, and phase 3 all showed kind of the same results, is these massive drops in the statistical analysis of their PTSD rating, that some of them no longer even qualified as having PTSD, and in the high to mid 90s no longer had statistically significant symptoms of PTSD that you know weren't being treated and could no longer be treated. And so for me, I wasn't in that use case. So I kind of sought it out through the other ways that weren't in the kind of medical space and in more of just the healing space. And so we were introduced to a healing center in California, which utilizes these medicine and healing ceremonies. And so I had 3 MDMA sessions over the course of this year, and they have been incredibly transformative, incredibly perspective shifting.
And if I can hop in here too to add, because I think this really helped me understand it, because I'll be super transparent. I was a skeptic for a while about psychedelic healing. And not that I don't begrudge anyone what they do to, you know, heal themselves, but it just, I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. What was a big shift for me and what really helped me understand it in the most simplest terms is that when you're taking MDMA, it essentially shuts down the fear center in your brain. And so you're going back in your, you know, for Adam, he was revisiting scenes from Afghanistan and Iraq in his journeys, but he was looking at them without any fear or judgment. So he was going back and experiencing these times that he had overseas, but with nothing except love and acceptance.
Yeah.
And so when he talked about the perspective shift, you know, and seeing his war experiences differently, seeing himself, seeing, you know, other people differently, and that big perspective shift came from actually experiencing these memories and going back to Afghanistan and being there and watching it, but now seeing instead the soldier who you had all this judgment for and questioned your decisions or felt guilty, you know, about things you did. Now seeing it as, oh, a 23-year-old guy that was doing the best he could to protect his brothers who he loved, and seeing your other brothers protecting each other, you know, and the people you lost, and how you saw that as such an incredible act of love. And so I think that is what really struck me and helped me get it, that it was like, oh, it's not that the MDMA or whatever plant or whatever medicine or plant medicine you take isn't just giving you these messages while you're just kind of tripping and getting high. Mm-hmm. It's that it's shutting down this fear and self-judgment. So you get to have an entirely different experience where you're looking through the lens of love and acceptance. And that's what really struck me as, oh, I see why this is so impactful.
And that is one of the most transformative in anybody's life. It, you know, dropping shame and guilt in your life like becomes this very freeing experience that kind of radiates to the world when other people didn't even know you were carrying it.
Mm-hmm.
But they can see this lightness in your soul now that you were carrying all of this guilt and all of this weight when there was nobody, there was nobody there to put it on you. You were, it was all an internal thing. It becomes this life-changing event where you can now look at the rest of your life as being what is being changed. Because you can see the path that you were heading down and you know where that path leads. And now you're heading down a path where, well, I might not know where this one leads, but I'm excited to be on it. I'm happy about it. And I'm experiencing walking down this path in a very beautiful way.
Just as you both are speaking about this and that idea, even Alex, when you were first saying it about, you know, without fear, without judgment, how much of a goal that, you know, that's a goal for a lot of us to look back and give our past selves a break for perhaps some things that we may have done or perspective, putting it in a different perspective, right? And I think that that's what so many people strive to be able to do, because how that can change, it does change the way we live currently.
Oh, absolutely. If I can share this too, Tressa, because this gave me chills when Adam shared it before. Someone asked him if through these experiences, was he able to forgive himself? And it just gave me chills when he said, no, it wasn't about forgiving myself. I realized there was nothing to forgive. There can only be forgiveness if there's condemnation. And I realized that I didn't have anything to forgive because I was doing the best I could. And I was acting out of love for my brothers and my country and trying to protect people. And that just rocked me to my core. And I think that's such a beautiful exploration of what true compassion and living without judgment means, is looking at going beyond the forgiveness and saying, what about giving yourself grace and owning that we're all on a journey? We all have a right to make mistakes because none of us was born perfect. We're not meant to do it perfectly.
That is the best resonating.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it becomes very apparent, I think, in veterans, because we've had these, especially combat veterans, who have these experiences which are very outside of the normal. They're abnormal experiences. And those experiences get carried back into our society, and in a society where it doesn't feel like it makes sense. It doesn't make sense that I was sent overseas to do these things for my country and lauded as a hero for doing them. But then I come home, and if I engage in a tenth of the behavior that was just normal everyday working conditions as an infantryman overseas, it's this very disconnected feeling of you can't be mean and you can't be brutal here in our everyday society, but that's kind of what the job entails overseas. And so you feel very disconnected when you return home. And so you return back to this, like almost this feeling of having this knowledge of your own ability for violence that's very disconnected from the way that the rest of society maybe sees you or sees the world.
Or even how your family sees you.
How
your loved ones see
you. Yeah.
I've thought about that. My grandfather fought in World War II. Even as he would share stories with us, I always thought about that. How did you come back home? How do you go from that every day, that way life to, by the time he got back home, my grandmother had my first uncle. And my uncle was 2 when he got back. And come back and you have a son already, let alone all of the other, I don't even, reacclimating, I don't even know if that's the word, but I often would think about that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what's interesting too, Tressa, as a veteran spouse, having gotten to meet a lot of Adam's friends throughout the years, I've had different conversations with different men that he served with who at times have mentioned, oh, you know, I don't share this with my girlfriend, or I don't share this with my wife, or, you know, I don't talk to my family about this because I don't want them to see me differently, or I don't want them to know what I went through or the difficult decisions I had to make. And as I've gotten very fortunate, I mean, I'm super thankful and grateful that Adam has let me in so much to know all about his experiences, but that didn't happen right away. That took time, right? He didn't just right off the bat start telling me about some of his really difficult experiences. But over the years, and especially even over the last year, there's more things he's shared with me, you know, even sharing about being in hand-to-hand combat with someone that he had never shared with me in the last 7 years, and finally opened up about it after his MDMA journeys, and so letting me in more and more. But, you know, I've just had so many conversations with other veterans who I hear that concern of, if I allow the truth of me that I experienced overseas to be seen by other people, they're going to judge me or not understand. They're not going to get it. They might not accept me. And I think that's one of the things that I've been so inspired by personally with Adam, is seeing that as he's gone through this healing journey and really stepping into these levels of deep self-acceptance, he's allowing himself to be seen more.
Like I was saying, is we have these experiences and we come home and we don't talk about them openly. We don't share them openly. And that's this thing that not only do we do as veterans, but also in society, we don't talk openly about our issues. We don't talk about our struggles and our problems. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that having these MDMA experiences really, I think, shows you, is the real benefit inside of sharing these things, and the real benefit in letting out some of those feelings that you're having inside of yourself, because it allows you to release that and to see it through that new light. Like, oh, I don't have anything to forgive. You know, there's nothing on me to forgive that I needed to forgive myself about, because I was put in these abnormal situations and it was just doing the best that I could. And I think we're all doing that. You know, you find it hard to go around in your everyday life and find somebody who's not trying. They might not be doing the right things, but they're trying in the way that they see it to make their life better or to help their world or to help get along.
I'm just letting that settle for a second, because it's are there groups or folks that you've connected with, or that you know, a community here that you find that you can share with?
Well, I mean, the Duquesne Psychology Clinic was incredible, right, with the space they provided for us and all the talk therapy we did. But then Adam and I actually, back in 2020, we sort of independently put together this organization that hosted a conference. It was March 7th of 2020, so it was literally probably the last live event that took place in history before everything shut down. Fortunately, we're so thankful that we got to have the event before that all happened. But we put together this conference, and we partnered with 11 other organizations, veteran-based organizations in Pittsburgh, and really focused on helping veterans step into the next level of their potential, really made it a growth event and focusing on thriving and, you know, coming home and healing, but also then thriving in your next steps as a veteran. And so we met a lot of great people, I mean, through that. And there's so many great organizations that are really, you know, looking to connect people and to connect civilians with veterans, to share their stories, like the Veterans Breakfast Club has been so fantastic. Yes. And Lee Wagner, he's at the time he was with
the Veterans Place,
or he's with Veterans Place now. And Lee has just been so instrumental in connecting you to people and us to people. Yeah. And so, I mean, we could name so many names, but there's really some fantastic organizations here that are providing those spaces for veterans.
And providing that non-judgmental space where a veteran can talk about these experiences. And I think it's incredibly important what Todd DePastino does with Veterans Breakfast Club in connecting, you know, our society to these veterans of, you know, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, who, you know, we're losing World War II and Korean era vets, and there's not a tremendous amount of them left.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing their stories and hearing about these moments of heroism and of bravery are, I think, incredibly important for us as a society to remember, like, we can look at our past and we can still remember the honor and the tremendous sacrifice that people made for this country, and that it is worth sacrificing and it is worth serving. So I think that as we move forward, we need to look at our next generations of veterans and how do we help create those spaces as well, where things can be talked about to our society without a judgmental lens of what was experienced, because that was kind of out of our hands. And not being able to openly express it and not being able to express it to your tribe or to the community that you felt like you were serving or the community that you belong to leads to these places where veterans don't feel seen and they don't feel understood. And if we're not understanding our veterans and we're not understanding what it is that we ask them to go do, we're far more likely to make the mistake of sending them again into wars that we don't have any business being in.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be, you know, out of all of the terror and out of all of that guilt and shame, if we can make something of it, it's to not create another another generation of damaged veterans.
I'll never forget, Tressa, when Adam was probably a year out of the military, he made a comment to me that he didn't want to be just another damaged veteran. And that was such a fear of his.
Mm.
And that I always remembered that. Mm-hmm. And then it was actually pretty soon after that, we went to a conference where we heard one of the speakers say that what every veteran needs most when returning home from war is a community to whom his experience matters. And that really made me think, you know, what our responsibility is as civilians, as citizens in this nation. You know, we've asked men to and women to go off and fight overseas and to serve our country, and then they come back, and so many of us forget. You know, I was mm-hmm. pretty surprised how many people had no idea what Adam was going through. You know, I had a friend of his once ask me early on, like, oh, do you think Adam still like thinks about the war? Does that still bother him?
Mm.
Oh my gosh, yeah, he's only, I mean, it's been 8 years and Adam still thinks about the war all the time, but that time especially, gosh, mm-hmm. it's been a year. And, you know, there's just, and I don't say that in judgment of his friend, there was just a lack of understanding. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lack of understanding because we didn't go overseas. We didn't experience it. It wasn't part of our everyday reality like it was back in World War I when everyone was impacted, you know, or World War II, everyone was impacted by the wars. But here, you know, we had no idea what mm-hmm. veterans were going through when they got home.
Yeah, I also think that we, even as a society, we focus on bypassing. We focus on looking at things that we may not, you know, we look at bad news. We look at things that we know are bad for us and we bypass. Mm-hmm. We bypass and we just move on with it psychologically because maybe the weight of the problem is too great, or maybe we feel like we can't make a difference in that small thing, so we bypass it. We just move, we just keep on moving, and it's, you know, it's not my problem. It's not my thing to fix.
Mm.
Where in reality, when we have these things that truly shock our society or truly bother us, we should be talking about them. We should be saying, hey, this is an issue and we need to deal with it. And, you know, I think it's one of those things that we can very easily see how veterans have bypassed their experience. But the answer is to share more of it,
mm-hmm.
share these things, because of course you're never going to have the experience we had. And thank God. Thank God we don't have to have those experiences, that our citizenry doesn't have to have the experiences of war the way that citizens of Ukraine are now experiencing, or
mm-hmm.
citizens of Syria or Iraq or Afghanistan had to experience, that this reality of war. Thank God our citizens aren't experiencing it. Mm-hmm. But that lack of understanding also leads us to a place of feeling far more free to go about making war.
What an incredible conversation.
Oh,
and
yeah, we appreciate that.
Oh my gosh. And can I ask too, so if folks are listening and they want to, you know, if they were interested in learning more about any of this or how maybe they can help or what civilians can do even.
Sure. Yeah.
I think if people are interested in learning more about psychedelic healing, I mean, they can certainly reach out to us. We're happy to connect them to the resources mm-hmm. we know, or Adam's happy to share even more about his experiences. I mean, you can definitely, we still have the email info at reengagepgh.com, okay. Which is what was our organization that created the Veterans Conference. And Adam's going to be putting together some things for veterans going into next year as well. Yeah. And more experiences to focus on, you know, this healing and stepping into the next level of your potential. So we're happy to connect with anyone about that. As we mentioned to the other organizations, I mean, the Duquesne Psychology Clinic, I'm not sure if they still have
the military side of it anymore, but, okay. But they would be a great place to connect veterans to, counselors and psychotherapists that understand the healing modalities that are really beneficial in that space for treating PTSD.
Well, thank you. Really. Thank you for sharing all that you have and for wanting to help others, taking your journeys and wanting to help others. And please come back on anytime.
Yeah, absolutely, Tressa.
Yeah, we'd be happy to. And you didn't even talk about ayahuasca yet.
Yeah,
so we've ayahuasca. Got a whole other part too. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. We're going to do it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Tressa.
Thanks for really having us, Tressa.
Hi there, Don.
Heidi ho, Tressa.
How are you?
I'm well.
Good.
How are you?
I am good. We are
very
not
staccato opening.
I know it was. I know. We're not in a vehicle this time.
No.
Unlike last episode.
Correct.
So we have that going for us.
Which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
This section won't be as driving though.
Really? Just right off the top?
Right off the top.
Wow. Okay. You're going to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
There are only three statements of fact.
What? Three statements of fact? You're changing lanes on me here, Tress.
Oh. Okay. Uh-huh. Can we just start over? No, this is all delightful.
In life or? Just this episode.
Well, you know, we can just jump in unless there's anything you'd like to share.
No, I want to be the driving force behind.
Okay, let's jump in. The two neighborhoods mm-hmm. from which you are choosing.
Yes, ma'am.
McKeesport.
Uh-huh.
Hampton.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Someone's hometown.
Yeah, you know it.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two.
Okay.
And with that, here we go.
Okay.
Number one, this neighborhood takes part in Operation Recognition, which authorizes school districts to grant high school diplomas to local veterans who missed their graduations while in service to our country.
I want to say Hampton.
Well, you'd be correct if you did, and Whoa. You did. It is Hampton Township. So, yes, U.S. military veterans of World War II, the Korean conflict, or the Vietnam War, who live or work in Hampton, are a graduate of Hampton High School, or a relative of a current student or staff member, all eligible to be honored via this program. And so the program was initially authorized by the Pennsylvania legislature in 1949 to allow World War I veterans to be awarded diplomas.
and later it was amended to include any honorably discharged veteran of World War II, Vietnam, and Korea. And the way it works, so the diplomas are awarded either during the annual Hampton Heroes program in November, right around the time this episode is dropping, or as part of the Hampton High School commencement ceremony at the end of the school year. And just a little asterisk, so the Hampton Heroes program, that's been going on since 2000, and that's an annual event that celebrates local heroes, you may put that together. Sure. And during that program, these newly nominated veterans are inducted into the Hampton Heroes program.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, listeners. So this time, Tressa and I are face to face. And when she was talking about the asterisk, she actually put her hand up to her mouth and whispered about it into the recording device. As if someone was eavesdropping.
Yeah, that's...
She had to direct the voice to, hey phone, there's an asterisk.
Oh, let's go to number two. Mm-hmm. The high school in this neighborhood was first named Shaw Avenue School, and then, in 1916, was known as Tech High.
Let's go for McKeesport.
Woot woot! Yes! Two for two, look at you. So yes, the very first high school, Shaw Avenue School, was located on...
Shaw Avenue?
Oh, you are bright. Uh-huh. Yes. And then a new building opened up on Cornell Street, and the school was renamed McKeesport Technical High School, Tech High for short. Uh-huh. We're going to keep going. In 1961, the school was moved to its current location adjacent to the McKeesport Vocational School and was renamed McKeesport Senior High School. Then, 1984.
Listeners, that was a finger up in the air on the word then. As if her hand has to go where the inflection of her voice does.
Thank you. Yes, that is. That
Providing
is how
you
it
with
works.
The visual. Mm-hmm. That's my job.
Uh-huh. 1984, it earned the moniker McKeesport Area High School, which is what it remains to this day. And there are actually other names and nicknames over the past 100-plus years, including Voc, because I mentioned that vocational school, it was there. Mm-hmm. South Hall. North Hall, just many things. It's kind of cool how it's evolved.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
North, south, east, west, Voc. I bet people, the kids, or the students who went there felt like they were so Voc.
We're going to go to the last one.
Yeah.
I think for everyone, should. For everyone's sake. Mm-hmm. Number three. It's time for Mascot Match! This is where you're...
You couldn't even hold it together on that one.
I couldn't. You're going to match the mascot to its school district.
Okay, so three with an asterisk.
No, and there was no asterisk this time. And it might be a little anticlimactic because I'm just giving you two. I mean, you're still matching, though.
Yeah.
So... So, yes, you were. Here are your choices. We have Tiger, Talbot, Mascot Match.
And well, it's the Hampton Talbots and the McKeesport Tigers, obviously.
Woohoo! You are correct. Now, bonus point. What is a Talbot?
It's a dog.
It is a dog. You know that.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk more about it because I did a little bit of a deep dive here.
Yeah?
Yes, I did. Now, I know
you
having graduated.
About a Talbot.
I did go, graduate from Hampton High School. And I didn't know much. I never knew much about the dog other than it was extinct. Mm-hmm. We thought, that's great for your mascot to be something that no longer exists. A little strange. But... So, okay, it is now extinct, but they were an extremely popular dog breed in England
between the mid-1500s until they went extinct in the 18th century. They were white hunting dogs used to track down both small and big game like bears, wolves, deer, and wildcats. They were the predecessors of modern beagles and coonhounds.
Okay.
Now, there are a few theories about the origin of the Talbot Hound and its name. A common belief is that the breed originated in Normandy, France, in the 11th century, and that William the Conqueror brought the dog to British lands in 1066, and eventually they showed up in England by the 1550s.
Because he wanted them to conquer all the bears and wild cats.
Yes, I believe they found that in his writings,
yeah.
That's exactly how he phrased it. And now as far as its name, the derivation of that, in medieval times, Talbot was already a common name for an individual hound. So before they even became popular in England, Talbot was already a word used for, a hound. But by the 17th century, Talbot clearly existed as an entire breed or type. And large, heavy, slow hounds were Talbot-like, whatever their color. And the milk-white hound was known as the true Talbot. Also something a little name-related. I'm going to toss out there. The Earls of Shrewsbury.
Ooh, the Shrewsburys.
Yes.
The false Talbots.
The false Talbot.
Instead of the true Talbot that we just spoke of.
Oh, thank you. Uh-huh. Yes, their family name is Talbot. And they have, as their family crest, as part of it, is a white short-legged hound. So which came first,
The Shrewsburys or the hound?
Yes. Don, that's a perfect score for you.
Yeah.
It is.
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was. And that was well done.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All of the Talbots appreciate it.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt.
Most importantly, the Earl of Shrewsbury.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is applauding.
Vigorously applauding.
Yes. I will now be on the family crest. With a 3 for 3.
They might put
Roman numerals.
They might put your face on it.
Right.
Until next time.
Till next time.
Thank you.
Bye.
And on that Name That Neighborhood note, we will be bringing this episode 74, to a close. I am your host, Tressa Glover. I thank you so much for listening in today, and I welcome those of you who are listening for the first time. A huge thank you to Don Nemchik and Adam and Alexandra Zafuto for the incredible conversation. And listeners, please do check out our show notes for the ways to get in touch with them if you'd like. And we also have the site for Veterans Breakfast Club in there as well. And if you do want to reach out and let us know if there's someone you would like to be featured on the show, if there's a story of someone that you're grateful for, an act of kindness that you want to spread the word about, yinsaregood@gmail.com is how to reach us here. Thank you. And until next time, my friends, be safe, be kind, be good. Special thanks to Sean Hall, the Veterans Breakfast Club, Don DiGiulio, and as always, for our fabulous artwork, Mike Rabino.